Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is on the line today, or soon will be, to answer your birding questions. If you have a question about birds, and a lot of people do, it's a popular show, call early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and somebody's already done that. VoxPopWAMC.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie is here. Your birding questions are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Well, the slowdown, how appropriate. Yes, we've been slowing down for a while, but now we're gearing up and ready for Vox Pop here at 21 minutes after 2. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is board member of the State Ornithological Association, or a board member, or maybe he's a retired board member. I don't. You know what? The show is 20 minutes late. The phones didn't work. Now the phones work. So we're going to commence with the program. If you have a question about birds, please give us a call before something else goes wrong. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Oh, the slowdown. Hey, Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ray. Wow. So glad to be here, finally.
Yeah, some days it doesn't pay to come to work. All right, well, I'll tell you what, without further ado, let's go right to the phones. Several people have been waiting an awfully long time. We begin with Cynthia. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just wonderful. And yourself?
Pretty good. I was wondering what was going on.
Oh, you and me both. Anyway, you're
on. Yeah, me too.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so here's the thing. We have bluebirds in our boxes in the summer, and normally, I don't know, sometime during August, earlier, mid, they leave, disappear. We don't see them again until the following year. But for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been seeing 3 bluebirds. What are they doing here? I have never seen them. I mean, where do they go? Where do they sleep? Why are they here?
Well, here's the story. And hi, thanks for holding on and staying with it. That's what the bluebirds are doing, too. They're holding on. They're hanging out. Not all bluebirds leave us in the winter. And when they find a nice place to stay, they'll stay. And it sounds to me like you set them up for a nice place there. And so they will actually, they could maybe even use those bluebird nest boxes as an overwintering, overnight roost, where they can stay out of the cold, stay warm, huddle up, cuddle up together, and everything will be fine. So, yeah, good for you. Bluebirds, always nice to have around.
Well, where do the ones that don't stay around go in the winter? Where do they migrate to?
Well, most of them don't even migrate far. They just go to a sheltered spot, maybe a little valley, a little cove. The most important thing is food, and then next is shelter. And so if they can combine the two of those, that's what they'll look for, and that's where they may spend the winter. And a lot of times it happens to be not far from where the nest box originally was. It may only be a fence row, a hedgerow, someplace out there by the far end of the field. But they usually don't go far.
Okay. I never saw that before. I was shocked.
Well, Cynthia.
Well, that's the good thing. With the more bluebirds that there are around, and the numbers are increasing thanks to bluebird nest boxes, and so the chances of them sticking around your neighborhood increase each year.
Cynthia, thanks a lot for the call. Thank you for waiting. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Did we ever figure out, has science figured out why some birds of the same species will head south? And some will stay north. Is there any benefit to a bird staying in a colder clime?
Yes. The benefit is that they're there in the spring. They lay claim to the territory. If it's such a good territory, they really don't want to give it up. And they do that, you know, at a risk of failure. You know, it's not always going to be hunky-dory through the winter. But if they're on territory, when the rest of them who left town and are returning, they win.
Ah.
So... So it's an advantage.
If they live, they win. That's pretty good. They make it through the winter. Let's go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris.
Yeah, I got two questions. Can pelicans fly out of the warm state in Florida? And last week in Pittsfield, I saw some seagulls flying around. Is that common for seagulls to stay away from the ocean?
Okay, why don't you do the second one first, Rich? We see
seagulls.
Yeah,
the second one
is
easy.
Yeah.
Most of our gulls, they're actually misnomered. Many of them are not seagulls at all. They may be lake gulls or field gulls or McDonald parking lot gulls. They nest to the north on the Great Lakes or Lake Champlain or up along the St. Lawrence River. And those gulls will go to the ocean for the winter, but not all of them. And some of them will come here and they'll hang around open water or where there's food available. And as soon as that runs out, they move on.
Uh-huh.
So, and we've been providing a lot of handy food for them during the winter. So more and more of them are sticking around. Now, as far as a pelican is concerned, yeah, they usually in the winter down south in Florida, Louisiana, Texas. But they do and sometimes will wander widely. And we've had them here in the Northeast on many an occasion before.
Okay.
Sometimes even in the wintertime, strange things.
Yes. Well, Chris, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. And let's go to Tom in, Tom, I can't figure out what the town you're in is. I suspect it may be a typo. Where are you, Tom?
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich. This is Tom, and I am in Casayuna.
Oh, it is Casayuna.
Out by Salem, New York.
Wow, okay.
Sure, yeah, Casayuna.
Apologies to our call screener. He got it right. Go ahead.
So I live pretty rurally. My neighbors are far apart out here, and I've had two bird feeders up for over a year, but just recently three cats discovered that I've been attracting birds, and I don't know what to do about that except I remove the bird feed, and hopefully the cats won't come back anymore. And I'm wondering, Rich, how long should I remove the food before I start feeding the birds again?
Well, it's not an easy answer. It depends on how long the cats stick around. If they were probably dumped off by some irresponsible people on your rural road. That happens way too often. And the poor cats are really suffering for that. And they may identify your house as a place that they may not be totally familiar with, but it's a safe bet to stick around. So you may get some look for some help from some of the rescue people to try to find a suitable place for those cats. In the meantime, you might want to stop feeding until the cats go away or they get discouraged and move on, which to me doesn't sound very likely. They're probably going to try to make themselves as comfortable as they can.
I haven't seen them since I did remove the bird feeders, and that's been about 5 days now. So perhaps the cats moved on and found someplace else. But now I'm worried about all the birds that I've been feeding for over a year.
Yeah.
Well, they'll be fine. They miss you, but they're out there, you know, having to work a little harder to find a meal. But you put those feeders up, and if you can put them in a place where they can readily escape if there's a cat marauding around still, then you can assess the situation and go from there. But in the meantime, you can probably put those feeders back up again. Just keep in mind that the birds will need an escape route to find safe shelter to avoid any predation.
Tom, thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The ship is now righted, and we are in the proper direction. We'll be right back. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop Birding Today with Rich Guthrie, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, a few emails have come in here. If you don't mind, we'll tackle those before we press on. This one is from Cynthia. And Cynthia says, once upon a time, Rich mentioned a few good sources for learning bird songs. Kindly update and or repeat it. And that's from Cynthia.
Well, I can suggest a couple. Try All About Birds. That's a Cornell University website.
Yeah.
All About Birds. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a site about identifying birds, and they'll have some sound recordings on there. And I can't remember some of the other ones. It'll come back to me.
All right, fair enough. Well, in the next half hour, you'll remember a couple of more. This one's from Mike. Guidance on a good bird feeder. I'm looking to put a bird feeder up on the edge of my backyard. I was planning to use sunflower seeds. Do you have suggestions on what I should look for or stay away from? And that's from Mike.
Well, sunflower seed is an excellent choice for a wide variety of bird species to come to your feeders. I would go down to one of the specialty shops, one of the local shops that specialize in bird feeders and backyard birding and the like. For example, the in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Wild Birds Unlimited or?
Wild Birds right. Unlimited. You're the man, Ray. Thank you. And that sort of shop. There are a wide variety that you can use that will attract the birds and deter the squirrels and other ravagers from feeding on them. And mix of other bird seed types. Suet is always a good choice. And crack corn. Plenty crack. You can spread that on the ground, and that will keep the sparrows and doves and even the blue jays quite happy.
Okay. Another question. Go ahead.
This year, thistle seed is the way to go, and you can buy a simple sock that's filled with thistle seed and put that out there. The goldfinches and siskins, and when they finally get here, the redpolls will love you for that.
Oh, interesting. You put it in the sock. I like that. This one is from Joe, also about birdhouses. Where should a birdhouse be placed on a tree? I put a bluebird house about 15 feet high on the southeast side to protect against the wind. Is this correct?
It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
The bluebird nest box depends on the dimensions of the nest box itself. The hole has to be precise. Too small for a starling to fit into it, and just right for the bluebirds. An inch and a half diameter hole. And aside from that, a shoebox size box placed on a tree or a fence post or a utility pole will usually do the job. What you need to have is the bluebirds somewhere nearby that they'll discover it.
Right.
And every periodically, you have to open it up and check inside to make sure there's not a bunch of field mice that have moved in.
This one is from Catherine in Vermont, in Charlotte, Vermont. And this is she sent a couple of pictures, which you can't see at this time, but we will forward them to you. She writes, this showed up at the feeder this morning. Big body like an owl, white chest, head like a hawk. Big bird. Cardinals and chickadees ignored it. When I went to investigate, it moved to the top of the bat house, wondering what it might be. Without seeing it, any ideas, Rich?
I'm going to, you know, I hate to ask if you're sure it's not a pigeon. We'll push that aside.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's not a pigeon, too. I would like to see the picture. There are a number of possible candidates. If it were a hawk, the Cardinals would certainly be paying attention. So I don't think it's one of them either. So, you can send me the picture at richardpguthrie@gmail.com, and I'll be glad to have a crack at it.
How do you spell Guthrie again, for those who don't know?
Here we go. Richard P as in Peter, Guthrie. Mm-hmm. @gmail.com.
All right. We have several more emails, but I'll read one more and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Scott in Peru, New York. He says, I live near Plattsburgh and would like to ask if turkey vultures migrate. A friend's dog recently disappeared. She thinks that a local farmer may have shot her dog. We hope that if her dog had indeed been shot, the local turkey vultures would point the way to the carcass, but we haven't seen any turkey vultures for over a year, a month.
Yeah. Well, that's not a happy-sounding story.
No.
The turkey vultures do migrate out. They, in fact, for a lot of folks up the North Country, turkey vultures overhead are one of the sure signs of spring, one of the vanguards of the season change. We do have a new vulture in town, a recent arrival, moved in, and that's the black vulture.
Yeah.
They're quite common in the Albany, Pittsfield and Springfield areas, but not quite north of there yet, but okay. They'll be getting up there.
All right, fair enough. Let's go back to the phones. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today, 800-348-2551. Lucy, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I live at the...
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, Lucy.
I'm here.
Oh. Try it again, Lucy. Lucy. Oh, we love Lucy and we lost Lucy. All right, if Lucy calls back, we'll do... It's just so ridiculous. Let's go to Miles in Newburgh. Miles, you're on.
Hey, Rich and Ray, how you guys doing?
Good.
I have a ongoing battle lately with house sparrows, sort of these squadrons of house sparrows that just jet across my property. And when I first bought this place about 20 years ago, it was full of finches and titmice and chickadees and wrens, and you know, the bird song was just amazing. The only thing initially, just for a little history, were crows that had been roosting in the trees for probably decades. And I couldn't sleep. I'd come out of an urban environment and these crows would wake me up at 4 a.m. So I bought a tape back in the cassette tape days of something called Death Cry of a Crow. And it was used for hunters to attract crows. And you were supposed to play it outside your window. When the crows had roosted, they would fly thinking there was a predator around. They would fly towards the window, towards the sound. You would do it for a week. They couldn't figure out why one of their brethren was being eaten by something because they heard this death cry. And then you sort of de-roost them. And that really worked. It was amazing. The crows disappeared and said, we don't want to live around here. Something's attacking our family and we're going to be gone. Hmm. There are still crows around, but they're not roosting right outside the bedroom window as they were. So now I have these house sparrows. And the biggest problem I'm having with them, first of all, they did scare off and bully a lot of the finches that I loved and the chickadees and the, you know, all the beautiful songbirds. Now they are in my chicken coop and they're stressing out my chickens because they're flying in there, eating the chicken food, roosting in there. I go in to gather eggs and they fly out by the dozens. Mm. And I'm really at a loss. I put up some of this reflective tape inside the coop, which freaked out the chickens, of course, as well. And then the chickens got used to it and then so did the sparrows. You know, and so now I'm going in and the sparrows are just nonchalantly hanging out in there. And my chickens have not been laying because they're stressed. Mm. So these sparrows are really sort of wreaking havoc on my property. You know, it's one thing when the songbirds were being bullied a little bit and I didn't love it, but what could I do? Every bird has its place, I guess. But my chickens now are not laying, you know, they're not paying their rent, so to speak. Yeah. So I just need some kind of way to control the number of house sparrows, because they're not living in harmony with the other flying critters.
Well, I feel your pain. And a similar thing happened here, although I don't have the chickens to add to that element to the problem. Perhaps getting right to the point is, perhaps can you put a smaller mesh screen around the coop so that the sparrows can't fit through and get in? Is there any chance that that's possible for the time being?
It's a pretty big run that they're in, and it's got wire. I could put a finer hardware cloth mesh in the whole run, but I can't limit the movement of the chickens. They need to go in and out of their coop and into their run and unobstructed. So that's been the challenge with that idea. Yeah,
I understand. I'm surprised they don't actually, that the chickens are alarmed by the sparrows. You know, most birds get along okay with one another of the different kinds. For example, I mentioned it here, the house sparrows, I don't know where they came from, but they're now here. and I'm dealing with 8 to 20 of them every now and then. But the other birds get along with them fine. I mean, it's just one of these things. They feed side by side. It's not an aggressive interaction at all. So I'm kind of surprised that the chickens are troubled by the house sparrows.
Yeah.
So anyway,
well, try
that.
They're eating a lot of the chicken. They're eating a lot of the chickens' food too, which is
well, yeah.
something
well,
we bought for the chickens. So
yeah,
there's an economic element to this as well.
I understand that. That will happen.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
So try the smaller mesh. Perhaps you, you know, for the time being, you can find some inexpensive material to string around your coop or the run.
Yeah.
Even if it's only on a temporary basis.
Well, that's interesting, Miles.
Yeah.
Thank you for that call. We appreciate it. You know, maybe you should break out the Death Throes of the Crow album and see what happens. I mean,
well, now the chickens will respond to that.
I mean, what did they get rid of Noriega with? Metallica. Why don't you try Metallica, Miles? Give that a shot. Let's go to Teresa in Stillwater. Teresa, you're on.
Yes, sir. I am trying to identify a bird that is a group of birds. Cowbirds are travel in flocks. And there is a number of these blackbirds. They are not starlings because they don't have a speckled back and they don't have a long beak. But these have a brown or a tan wing line. And the rest of them is black. And it's about the size of a robin. And I cannot find anything that tells me what this type, this bird might be. Any ideas?
Off the top of my head, it sounds like you're on to the starling identification, and it's not one of them. So brings us up to the blackbirds. And cowbirds, why not cowbird? Can that... Why rule them out? They do move around.
It doesn't have the distinctive brown head. It's completely black. Okay. Is it not? There's a variation on them.
No, there's only in the sex and age. Female cowbirds are not black like the males are. They're grayish color. And perhaps a juvenile red-winged blackbird will be partially black on the back not entirely have the black or the red on a wing that the adults would have. So can you get a picture?
Yeah,
and
it's got, I was thinking about doing that. I should get your
Let's do the email address again. Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, feel free. Shoot one off to me. It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com. And I love to get these things, and I do, you know, and, you know, I hope I can get to them before they disappear down the scroll line on the mailbox. But, try that. We'll see what we can do for you.
All right, Teresa, thanks a lot. Tell you what, Rich, this email from Lucy in Gallatin, who, you know, we just got to her, and then her line collapsed. So she wrote an email. And then why don't we do this email and then take a quick break? And then we'll get back to the phones. You know, we lost about 13, 14 minutes on this show, so we won't get to everybody, but there are several calls we can get to and maybe a couple of more emails. This one's from Lucy. Lucy says, I live a few hundred feet from the Rollfield Jansen Kill. Last night around 8 p.m., we hear calls from owls or owl, which we identified on eBird. When we played the calls, it appeared that they were responded to. How can I figure out where the birds were? It was much too dark and cold to go outside, and that's from Lucy.
Well, if they were within hearing distance, they're not far away. The chances of seeing them are going to be slim because they're going to see you, and they're going to slip around so that they stay pretty much out of sight. And that's a great point. The great horned owls ought to be setting up their territories right about now.
Yeah.
They're pairing up and kicking the kids out so that they'll have a nest spot ready for when they start courtship and nesting in January into February. So, they're staking their claim out right now. The chances of seeing them are pretty slim. The barred owl, better chance they come out more so in the daytime.
Yeah.
And that you can just listen to for them. But the great horned owl, they're pretty reclusive.
Now, another owl question came in much, much, much before the show. This is from Sally in Troy, who says, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan and love the owl in the book named Hedwig. It's my dream to see a white snowy owl. Where would I have to go to see that, and how rare are they to spot any advice for my snowy owl dreams? And that's from Sally in Troy.
That's a good question. Open fields, wintertime. And from the Troy, New York area, head on up to Washington County to the grasslands, the Washington County grasslands. Check them out. You can Google the site, Washington County Grasslands. It's an important birding area. If your chances are pretty good up there, not guaranteed, because they're wide open areas and they hunker down pretty good. They can become invisible even in the open. The other possibilities are airports or farm fields. And on rare occasions, they'll come right into the city.
Okay.
Albany, Schenectady, Troy, we've had them there.
Fair enough. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, and we will get to as many calls as we can in a lightning round, which will happen right after this. Thank you, Zachary. Back to Vox Pop at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie joins us today to answer your bird questions, and Laura's in Lee, Massachusetts. Hello, Laura.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. We live, our property abuts the town forest, and we, a few years back, started putting up a pileated woodpecker feeder and really enjoyed watching the pileated woodpeckers. This year, I'm noticing something different that I wondered if you could comment on. In when we walk in the woods, and now, unfortunately, right behind our house, actually, the pileated woodpeckers are peeling off long, long, long strips of bark that go way up the trees and don't appear to be limiting that to dead trees.
Mm.
So I hadn't noticed that before, and so I'm just wondering what Rich you could say about that.
Well, I'm wondering what kind of tree it is, and I'm suspecting it may be ash trees. But nonetheless, woodpeckers of any type are in search of food this time of year. So whatever their behavior is about, it's about food, and so they're looking under the bark of a tree. And into the wood of the tree for wood-boring insects of one type or another, either the insects themselves or the overwintering grubs. So that's what that's about. The woodpecker is going after a tree that's already infested. They're not bringing the pestilence to the tree itself. So there's something going on. I suspect that, you know, unfortunately, we're losing our ash trees to the emerald green,
yeah,
the emerald ash borer. And so there's going,
yeah,
to be an abundance of food and available for the woodpeckers to go after.
All right, Laura, thank you very much. It's a lightning round here. Rich Guthrie is joining us today. We lost quite a chunk of the program with technical difficulties, so we'll move as quickly as we can. Elise in Pittstown. Elise, you're on.
Hi, I live near the Tamahanik Reservoir, and every now and then a bald eagle will fly over my house. But last week he parked himself very close on top of a tree right next to my house. And at the top of the tree, he spread its wings out and squawked, really high-pitched squawking for a long time, and then sat there for a while and then took off. And I was stunned to see him, and I'm just wondering what that behavior was about.
Interesting. Rich.
Well, thanks for that. The bald eagle has increased remarkably in our area throughout the Northeast and throughout the listening area. And that behavior that you were seeing was that eagle was seeing another eagle. They can't keep quiet when another eagle shows up. They like them, they love them, or they want to tell them to get lost. So that's what that was about. So I suspect it was on territory, and it was greeting in a happy way or a bad way to another eagle nearby. So all's good. No harm done.
Pretty cool.
Oh, good. Great. I hope I see it again. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call. Quickly over to Rosendale, New York. And Mark, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I just put up a bird feeder, or actually some friends did for me, and I noticed immediately that blue jays were kind of colonizing it and monopolizing it from all the other birds. Is there any recommendation you have on things to feed that maybe the blue jays don't like or other ways to keep them out?
Well, blue jays like everything you put out there. I don't think there's anything you can put out that they don't like. And if it is, the other birds won't like it either. You can change the type of feeder. So instead of a platform feeder or one that they can easily perch on, make it smaller mesh. Or I recommend actually these thistle socks are specially made and filled already with thistle. And you put that out there this year with the goldfinches and the siskins, you're sure to have some fun company.
All right. Thank you so much. That's helpful.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. Are those thistle socks very expensive, Rich? Because, you know, Christmas is coming, and frankly, you hang those in front of the stock, you know, the fireplace, save a little money.
Well, then, you really do want to hang them outside. I don't know, you know, and they're not expensive at all. I mean, and they could be refilled. I mean,
I think it would be fun to see the kids try to nibble on them, you know?
Or the mice, you know.
No, not in our house. Charlotte in Charlotte. No, it's Catherine in Charlotte. Oh, whatever. You're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for squeezing me in.
You bet.
Quick. I'm the one with that funny looking bird, and no, it is not a pigeon.
The email. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And I sent an email to Rich. I don't know if he got it, because I don't know if I spelled everything right. But it was a really big bird. And I have regular barred owl visitors because I live on the edge of the woods, so I see them a lot. But this is not a barred owl. And it was huge. And I was shocked that the songbirds didn't seem to care. They should have cared, but they didn't.
It was a big bird.
I kind of hoped he'd go after a squirrel, but he didn't. This is a really, really large bird, as big as a barred, if not bigger. But it had a hawk-like head, although the head moved like an owl's head because it would kind of turn all the way around. But it was, a hawk head. Or it kind of looked like an eagle head, but the rest of the body didn't look like that.
Well, I got your picture. I got the photo, and thank you for that. That worked very well. From the photo, and this is a quick look at it, it's a red-tailed hawk. It's a young red-tailed hawk. And why the other birds were not interested, you'll have to ask them. They ought to be, although red-tailed hawks don't go after birds, but birds ought to worry anyway.
That's what I was thinking. So you think that's a red-tail? Okay.
Yeah, it looks great. I'm looking at it. It's a young red-tailed hawk from the pictures that I can see.
Well, Catherine.
All right. Well, thank you, because I looked in the bird book, but it just wasn't matching up with anything I saw.
Well, I really appreciate you following up on that one. Thank you. Over to Spencer, Massachusetts. Nancy, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. This is such a wonderful show.
Thank you.
So I have a question, Rich. I have in my barn, it's about the ceiling of the lower loft is about 20 feet high, and there is an electric tube that has electric wire going through for about, I don't know, for 20 years maybe I've had. Barn swallows that build a nest right over a light fixture, and they usually come and they raise three clutches. This year, they came late. They only raised one clutch. I don't think it seemed like they didn't like the nest anymore. So I thought, well, maybe the nest is getting too close to the bottom of the floor of the loft. There wasn't much headspace. I had that nest knocked down because it's not in a good place anyway. And now, in preparation for next spring, I'm wondering how I should make some sort of a platform or something to entice them to make their nest in a new location.
I would recommend doing that. Put a small square shelf up against a beam or a platform, and let them find that, and I hope it works. The barn swallows have been having a tough time lately. Good luck with that then.
Nancy, thank you very much. Quickly, we only have about 90 seconds here, but Bill in New Paltz has been waiting a while. Bill, you have about a minute to pose the question.
Oh, thank you so much. This is my favorite Vox Pop. I love your show, both of you, Ray and Rich. Rich, how do you deal with the possibility if you put corn on the ground in the winter, crack corn, whatever it is. How do you deal with cats? I'm afraid to put it on the ground because I'm afraid cats will learn that the birds are on the ground instead of at the feeder.
Well, then you don't want to put it on the ground. Anytime there are cats around, the welfare of the birds comes first. So feeding them is mainly for your benefit. You don't want to benefit the cat along the way. So keep the bird feeders out of reach so that the birds can find food and get away quickly. So unfortunately, cats and birds don't mix well.
I agree, and that's what I was concerned when, because I heard you for years talking about putting corn out for crows and other birds.
I love it.
I'm reluctant to do that.
Yeah, I understand. And, that's the caveat. The cats are the caveat.
All right, Bill, we'll have to leave it there. Rich Guthrie, once again, and we often get it. You'd be amazed how many emails we get to Vox Pop with bird questions, and we forward them to you. But why don't you give your email address one more time?
Easy pickings. And just a reminder, Christmas bird count season is coming up next week. Go to Google Christmas bird count circles. If you're in one, participate best you can. Even feeder watches are more than welcome. It's Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
Well, Rich, I appreciate you hanging in there while we figured out how the phones would be repaired, but we got through another one. And if I don't talk to you before Christmas, have a great one, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Ray, thanks very much. It's terrific, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Hyde Collection. Now open by appointment only Friday through Sunday, seniors 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the general public. HydeCollection.org for appointments. And Veterinary Hospital of Laurel Ann Brown, Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, providing compassionate care for dogs and cats in our larger hospital, drlaurelinbrown.com. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for being with us. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the patience while we figured things out. Apologies if we didn't get to your calls. Rich will be back soon. That's a guarantee. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Carl Blackwood. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen joins us to answer your COVID-19 questions. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.